For August the 11th, 2017, we talk about Tacoma, the Horizon Zero Dawn expansion announcement, and we ask you which games have the best sound design. Welcome to Level 207. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. That's right, rocking it three style this week with Dennis back in the saddle. Welcome back, Dennis.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm
a well-traveled individual now coming back.
Where were you at? Was it like a work?
This was a fun trip, and it was a sans kid trip.
We
went to Colorado.
Shit, that's what that was. You were talking about this, but for some reason time got really malleable in my head.
It happens to me with my own travel, so I wouldn't be surprised that it happens to you with my travel.
I would have. I thought that the Colorado trip was several weeks ago.
No, just one. It was great. We did all kinds of things that you can only do when you don't have kids, like hike 10 miles through the mountains, which was fun because we thought the loop we were hiking was a 5-mile hike. So that was interesting. Nice little challenge there. Visited lots of small towns. We did Colorado Springs. We did Boulder. We did Littleton. We did, Nederland, a whole bunch of cool little places. And it was awesome. Checked out some distilleries, which was fun.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And that's when you went on you went to see those concerts, right?
Oh, right. Well, there was a concert too. Yeah, that's the whole reason we're out there. We saw the Head and the Heart at Red Rock. It was awesome. Group Love was there too. They killed it. That was a great time. It was like right at the beginning of the vacation. And I think we've realized that we can't do that to ourselves anymore. Change time zones by 2 or 3 hours and then plan something immediately late at night.
Ooh. Yeah.
It's like when the Head and the Heart was going on, it was midnight for us.
Okay. Yeah. That's the thing.
We were all out of woo at that point.
See, was that on a Friday too?
Yeah, that was a Friday. No, it was a Thursday.
Okay.
No, it was a Wednesday.
Oh my God.
Time is lost on me. Yeah, it was a Wednesday night. But it was awesome. Like they had a band member that was kind of on hiatus. But you know, it's Red Rock and everyone wants to do something special. So he came out and played like 3 encores with them. And I think they've got a bunch of family in town. So they were like giving special shout outs to like mom and dad and stuff. So it felt very much like a homecoming concert.
They had 3 encores?
Yeah, it was awesome. It's like, I think it's just because the venue is like so special and beautiful that people feel like they want to do special and beautiful stuff. So, they played their set, they went off, the lead singer alone came back out and sang like an a cappella version of, you know, like a verse and a chorus of one of their songs. Then the rest of the band came out and they revealed that they're like, yeah, he didn't tell us he was going to do that. He was just like, I have an idea. Let me try something. So. Turned out pretty well. Then they brought on this bandmate who was on hiatus, but came back and I think it was 3 full songs that they played, which we were happy. Like it was all, you know, hits that we were hoping to hear. So, the energy was good.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
And then I hiked 10 miles and my legs fell off. So.
At what point did you realize, did you realize that you were in for double the amount of hiking? Because I don't doubt your ability to do it. What I would worry about would be like, all right, well, we've got this much water and we have this many, I don't know, bars of food, and you're rationing them out as you're pacing yourself, right? And so every aspect of that is fucked.
Set up. Yeah, we thankfully it wasn't too hot, so we didn't have much trouble with dehydration. But I think we realized we'd done bad when we, you know, there was like 3 legs to the trip, and we got, to this point where you're crossing over, a stream, and I could see on the map where we're crossing over a stream, and we were both just wiped out because the first portion was all uphill and all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, we're about a third of the way done with the first leg. This is kind of realization. So we got done with the first leg and we were like, should we turn back? And I was like, no, let's, if we can get halfway through the loop, then we can do the whole loop. Well, let me rephrase that. If we can get halfway through the loop, then we have to do the whole loop. So we pushed ourselves. It was fun, and it felt good to like challenge yourself.
Right.
And the second half was all downhill, and that made a world of difference.
I'm sure.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the hike? Like what was the trail or what park were you in?
We were in Rocky Mountain National Park, and the trail that we started at the Storm Pass trailhead and went up Boulder Brook Trail to start, and then circled around past Alberta Falls and back to the start. So
yeah, I was kind of positive somebody would have asked at one point, so I wanted to get out in front of it.
That's smart. Yeah, someone write on the Slack and tell us or on Twitter if you actually recognize where the hell I'm talking about. I mean, Ben, you're no stranger to Colorado. I don't know if you spend any time
looking it up right now. Yeah. I haven't been to Rocky Mountain National Park. In fact, I haven't. I've done, and I knew you did this too. I went on Pikes Peak while I was in Colorado Springs and Garden of the Gods. Those are cool, but they did not require any hiking or physical activities. So that part.
No,
was nice.
You tried to sit on a train for a little bit,
mm-hmm.
Which is a beautiful trip. We got sat on the ride up Pikes Peak, right in the middle of the car, which you would think is good, but there's these two areas that don't have windows because there's like supports for the train there. And that took up probably a third of my cone of vision, right in the middle of where I would normally be looking. So it was a lot of like leaning around this support to see anything.
Mm. We ended up driving up when we went there, which was an interesting experience because they have checkpoints along the hill to make sure that you don't brake too hard as you're going down, because otherwise your car will like overheat and it'll burn through your brake pads.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I saw only part of the road, but it seemed like a harrowing experience.
It's pretty cool.
Like,
yeah.
I was glad that I was not controlling the vehicle because it was steep.
Yeah, that's fair. There's apparently like a place in Colorado Springs too, where it's like a giant staircase that you can walk up. And I don't know how high of a mountain it goes, but like apparently they have issues with people like trying to walk up it and then passing out halfway up. So,
oh, that's bad.
Yeah.
No, I managed not to do that, which I'm proud of. But
yeah.
So yeah, that was a lot packed into 1 week off for me. I also was telling Cole that I closed on my house literally the day that we record this. So that's momentous.
Yeah.
It's been a big 2 weeks.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what's up with all you guys? I feel like I've dominated the banter.
Comparatively
section.
Nothing.
Yeah, no, I've just been reveling in not having a terrible amount of assignment play to do. Like over the past week, we recorded the final Bonfireside chats, and we got a big Watch Out for Fireballs off of our plate. So I'm at a moment of like collective work lull, which means I can take care of some stuff that I've been neglecting for a while. So that is a good feeling, but nothing as exciting as either a major life milestone or going to walk in a beautiful part of the country.
Yeah. Ben? I mean, it's fun in its own way.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I was trying to think of a joke of Bonfireside Chat being dead and you can do another run through it dead instead of alive, but I don't know. Table that for later.
Okay.
Short story though is I was at the grocery store tonight and somebody complimented me on my shirt, but it was the Level shirt.
Ooh.
So hey! Either you made a good design, Cole, or you made a good podcast, or both.
Hey, either. I'll take either. Yahtzee. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and get started with the rest of the show. Let's go do the normal thing. We've got the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and we're going to get started with
the brief,
where we talk about the things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Let's see, Dennis, what is the story that you have brought for us?
Yeah, I got a combo here, and the theme is games I was about to play anyway.
Okay.
Because there were major content announcements for both Horizon Zero Dawn, and I know everyone hears Video Game Static when I say that name, and No Man's Sky. So Horizon Zero Dawn's, I was about to say Horizons Zero Dawn.
Yeah.
Like the Attorneys General.
Horizon, no dawns allowed.
Yeah. They had their first big DLC dated as November 7th is when it's coming out. It looks like we'll be going to Yellowstone. which would be awesome. There's just some hints, like it's north, I believe, or in the Colorado area of the Rocky Mountains, is where like the main game is.
Yeah.
And it looks like this is going to go north of there.
Yeah. Like there's a lot of like volcanic activity in this, right?
Yeah. Which is based on the actual geology of the area.
Right.
Is totally possible. So, that plus new monsters. There were no new monsters shown in the trailer, which did come out at E3. Hmm. There's kind of a shadowy something that could just be a regular like giant monster that's in the game, or it could be something new. Not sure. I imagine there will be new machines in the DLC, and there's at least one giant beast guarding the mountain, which is exciting. So, can't wait to play that. I think you get a bit of a discount if you pre-order, and I have no compulsions on doing that because I'm very certain that I will play it. But I had literally, when I read this story, I was literally downloading Horizon Zero Dawn thinking, you know, it got an extra hard mode. I should check that out. I somehow missed the DLC from E3. So I was like, wait, what? And now I have to decide if I'm going to go through and play hard mode and then go back and play the DLC, or if I, should just hold off in general. My hope is that the DLC kind of fits in nicely if you have a finished game. Hmm. Like, it seems to take place after the main game, in terms of timeline. Hopefully I'm not missing anything huge by playing the game and then getting the DLC at the end.
Yeah.
We will see.
Yeah.
The No Man's Sky update that is coming is called, where'd it go? The Atlas Rises update. And specifically they've called out that it is going to help with the story. And maybe that means it'll give it more of one.
Yeah. Atlas is like the name of the crazy AI thing that is helping you out. Like, it is the choice that you can make at the beginning that will take you along a path and give you like objectives and stuff.
Yeah. Or yeah, it's AI might even be a generous term. A name that is only vaguely explained until maybe you get to end game. I don't know. I haven't gotten there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I had it downloaded on my PS4, and I know they've done a ton of updates to improve the game. So I had been eyeing that as another game to go back to.
Yeah.
And with 1.3, whenever it actually drops, I might actually do that. So they are being very tentative. They're not listing out any patch notes of exactly what goes in. And they kind of make specific reference in the announcement to the fact that they say something about like what we do matters more than what we say. And we've made that mistake before. So we're doing this. Here's high level what it's about. And we'll give you more details when we know exactly what it's going to be. Nice. So one, it's nice to see that they have kind of come through a ton of shit that got dumped on them when the game launched. Rightfully so or not is debatable. Mm-hmm. And seem to be continuing to improve the game and also, you know, having a level of success. So that's cool to see more content coming out for that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking there's probably another 2 years, 1 year worth of content, and then it'll be interesting enough for you guys to play.
Of No Man's Sky?
Mm-hmm.
I'd be curious. So this is part of the problem when games get so much added after release, you know, it is a, you know, it's a feature of the medium. It's a good thing that this happens, right? They're going in and fixing a product that was either broken or not all there, depending on your point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Good. However, because this is kind of issued in dribs and drabs, what you end up with as being kind of the only main source of truth about the actual ways that it's changed and when certain changes took effect, what is different than the main version, which I only played like 4 hours of or something, is like release notes, patch notes, maybe a couple of news articles like this one. Like, there is no... I almost wish that there was just like, have they pulled like a Final Fantasy 14 or whatever, where they released it and said, oh, we fucked up, and then did not like took it down, but like released it as a new product and said, hey, here is No Man's Sky, the definitive edition or whatever, with all the stuff that we wanted to add. So I could actually like understand what was new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They need like a change-o-meter that shows you how significant an impact their updates have.
Right.
They need a game diff tool.
Yep. Yeah. Just let me walk along, you know, along the forks, you know, this section of the galaxy, it's the old shitty one. And over here is where all the new good rules are in effect. Yeah. Yeah. That's my problem with it. Yeah.
I mean, hopefully if they're focusing on like the campaign, that'll kind of explain itself maybe. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. I also need to know exactly what is changing in order to make it feel like it's worthwhile to go back into it. Cause I'm only good.
Sorry, go ahead. I'm just judging the story by the cover, but quick travel, I don't think will fix the game. I don't think that was a problem with the game.
No, traveling is kind of like the point. I really liked the travel.
That gives you the immersion of the place that you're in.
Yeah. Something that makes the universe feel smaller is not going to make that, is not going to do the game a lot of favors.
Well, remember with a previous update, they had a kind of a base building element added. And so with players able to set up shop, I think they wanted to make it easier. There is more of a sense of home and place to an individual planet. Mm-hmm. I think there was a warping. You could always warp back to your base. And then, you know, like it was a one point to many points travel.
Yeah.
So this sounds like it's more point to point travel.
Yeah. I don't know. I would have to see how it articulates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh. Well, both of those are big things. I'm more interested in the Horizon Zero Dawn part of it. If I'm being honest with you.
Excited for that as well.
Yeah. Ben, tell me about these Let's Plays you dug up.
Yeah. So I couldn't really find a story that I was completely interested in, but there was one that was posting, not really relevant of necessarily news, but it pointed to a channel of a game designer named Robert Yang, or rather a game developer and professor of game design. And it's his Let's Plays that he's doing of Half-Life 2 right now. And so each episode's about an hour long, and it goes through maybe a section of the game. And then he'll just point out details about the mapping or like the lighting and things like that, and talk about like, you know, things that they might have been intending to do that were good, things that might be mistakes, and can point out bugs and stuff. So I watched an hour of this before the podcast, and it was somewhat engrossing. So I feel like if you're bored by me when I'm talking about Rocket League later, you could just listen to this instead. And that would be a better experience. But so like some of the things he was pointing out is like he was at the section of Half-Life 2. Sorry, I'm going to spoil this game for people who haven't played in the last 12 years or so. But
13-year-old game.
So he was pointing out the part where you're at the turret defense, and like the refugee building that was been taken over by the Combine.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like pointing out details of like how like there used to be two floors, but the floor has been ripped out in certain places, and the Combine like the way that they did the art direction is basically goes over top of like these existing doors that were there to kind of indicate that they don't care about the human architecture. Is like just interesting points like that. And then pointing out like kind of like the lighting details they do, or some of the game design things they do, like where there's a certain puzzle where you need to walk across barrels to jump across the stair ledge. And he's talking about how on both sides of it, it's also shaped like a bowl where there's stairs going in either direction. So that if you accidentally like throw an item too far, it'll roll back to you. And there's like no way that you can throw it in a place where you can lose it permanently. So like small things like that, that were pretty interesting that just never really would have picked up on my own, I guess, since I did a normal speed run through it. So I don't know. That was interesting. So in the ever developing world of watching people play games, that is something that might be worth watching.
Yeah, this is fantastic. It looks like he's also done a similar exploration of Half-Life 1 as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, this is great. This is the content that I crave.
Mm-hmm. This is, for me, this is prime food eating watching material.
Yeah. So food for thought while you put food in your body.
Yeah.
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 Make your brain fat.
Huh. Well, that's awesome. I'm going to check out some episodes of this.
Okay, cool.
Because this is cool. It's so hard to find like the good stuff in this, honestly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of screaming at the screen going on, right?
Yeah, yeah. My story is pretty brief, but it's one that grabbed my interest, and maybe this will get other people excited too. Darkest Dungeon is a game that we've spoken about a lot on the show. I think that all of us have played it to some extent, right? Dennis, you have it? Cool. I'm excited because they are going to be releasing a version of Darkest Dungeon on iPad on August the 24th. So coming up here, not too far away, it is a full version of the base game with the expansion, the Crimson Court, coming later. But yeah, this is
seems like it's a pretty touchable game.
Yeah, like the developer in their release talked about it, like, oh, we accidentally made a game that would be very touch friendly, and that's something I noticed right when I sat down to play. I was like, oh man, I want to play like a game this discouraging. I don't want to sit down and commit myself to it. I want to play this in bed where I can just say fuck it and put it down, you know.
I want to be somewhere where I can throw the controller / console when I'm right. angry at my party wiping.
Yeah. But they say that this is a quote: better yet, the touch interface fits the game perfectly. We've long maintained that we accidentally made a very touch friendly game, and now we finally get to exhibit that in the most natural form. So yeah, like, this is going to be a quote premium priced app. You pay once, it's not going to be like, you know, give them $2 to start a new run or whatever.
Pay them $1 to remove a mental disorder.
Yeah, right. You have to pay actual money to send someone to the bar.
Right. Yeah. So it seems like they're doing it pretty right, and this will get me back into the game, I'm pretty sure.
And now, have you played the DLC?
No, I have not.
Okay. So yeah. still plenty of new stuff to discover.
Mm-hmm. Although the DLC will come later in the year.
I do think it's ironic with my playthrough through the game that I feel as mentally scarred playing that game with playing through the Darkest Dungeon that the players probably feel.
Oh, here's another detail of the story that I forgot to share. For you people who may have played a lot of this on the PC, Mac, or Linux, or whatever, they actually have a save in port.
So, yes!
So you can take your save file, put it into a Dropbox folder, and then they're using the Dropbox API. You just point it at the folder where it's at, and then boom, you're picking up right where you left off.
Nice. That's awesome, especially for someone who petered out kind of mid-game like I did.
So that's incredibly conscientious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very self-aware of them. Like,
yeah. No, these guys are all right.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. I think that's a brief.
I think it is.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, the question is all about audio and sound design in games. So a lot of times we even talk on the show about playing while listening to something else, but there are several games that demand your audio attention, and we wanted to hear which games you thought had the best sound design.
Yeah, and I'll get us started here with Greg, who says, two games that come to mind for me for critical sound. There is an old Atari 2600 game called Dolphin that I really like, where you need to listen to sonar pitches to know which hole you need to steer the dolphin into. Otherwise, you just crash into a seawall and get eaten by a squid that is chasing you. Grim. You need the sound to play this game due to that. Also, I'm a huge fan of the arcade game Gyrus, and the electronic version of the famous Bach theme that plays during the game is classic and pumps you up to play the game. No music equals a boring game. Yeah,
fair enough. I should clarify as well, because I saw several people make mention of this. Soundtracks, I think, are on limits. Like, if it's good enough that you decide, hey, I want to pay attention to the sound, that falls within bounds for me.
Yeah. Ben, what does Paul say?
Paul says, I've always loved Castlevania 1 and 3 for the music and sounds. In modern times, Bloodborne really came together for me, and I found myself playing it in the dark with noise-canceling headphones all the time.
Yeah. All the Souls games do ambient sound very well. Bloodborne benefits in that regard because there's an awful lot of like ambient combat barks in a way that there are not in other games, and other games in the series, where like, if you listen and pay attention, if you're fighting somebody who is sentient and aware, they're going to be like screaming obscenities at you and stuff.
Yeah. To be fair, the other games have combat barks, so they're all just.
Yeah. It is a detail that definitely makes it not more atmospheric, because like Demon's Souls is atmospheric as fuck, but makes it a standout in the series, for at least the audio carrying more information than mood, right?
Yeah, and this has been talked before on the network, but specifically having the background with the Souls games, and then the first time you have an enemy talk coherently at you.
Yeah.
In Bloodborne is a very special moment that's kind of built on the back of three games worth of just guttural sounds.
Yeah, so, of telling you that doesn't happen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, we've talked about this as well, but like the sound is an important part of the boss fights in those games. Like oftentimes due to the way the camera works, you're not going to be able to hear when a potentially life-ending thing happens. And so like that is, you know, as big of a part of the experience sometimes as watching the animations, right?
So yeah, you sometimes get attack cues through the sound?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, cool. All the time.
Yeah.
I think on this show too, we've had someone talk about, you know, like strategies for beating a difficulty curve and literally just turning off the music in those boss fights because it makes it seem so much less intimidating.
Yeah. You could probably hear the sound cues better too for their attacks.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there you go.
Yeah. I think I may have talked about that in the past. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dennis, what does Michael say?
Yeah, Michael says Doom 2016 has some of my favorite music in games ever. In addition, the sound design on the guns plays into the amazing feedback from your weapons. This feedback makes them feel forceful and weighty. Since at first blush it may seem like a brain-dead shooter, you may be tempted to tune it out in favor of podcasts. Don't do it. The sound design is one of the many reasons Doom is great.
Yeah.
I bounced off that game hard, but the sound was not one of the problems I had with it.
Yeah, and that is a value that id has had down the line. Like, you know, if I cut in the shotgun sound from Doom 2, I think everybody like would have the hair on the back of their neck stand up, as we're going to find out right now.
I think that might have knocked some people out of their chairs.
Yeah,
your head snaps back reflexively.
Yeah, that's fun.
We should just add Doom 2016 music into the podcast to make it seem like we're doing something really important or really awesome.
To bring a little bit of gravitas to it. Yeah. John writes, for strictly sound design, Dark and Demon Souls, the enemy sounds are just so well done and add a ton to the tense atmosphere, as well as cluing you into what may be around the corner. For soundtrack, Persona 5. I could rave about it for hours. Amazing compositions, very soulful and groovy jamming, emotionally evocative mood pieces, strong lyrics, lots of references and callbacks to other tracks. It's a triumph.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I can't think of a video game that I've played that wasn't like Rock Band, where I paid attention to the actual lyrics of a song.
Yeah, that's something that I don't think I talked about it with Metal Gear Rising. But when you're fighting the boss fights, they've got versions of the tracks that start out with just the instrumental, and then it picks up intensity as you enter the mid phase of the fight, and the final phase of the fight adds in the lyrics. And if you go read the lyrics, they're about like that boss and their idea. You know, they're like Metal Gear gimmick or whatever. It's actually. It's subtle because a lot of it's like yelled and kind of covered by this, you know, very chaotic, you know, rock music. It's covering
the weak point is on the ankle.
Oh man, that's a good one. But yeah, that's another case of the lyrics coming through.
So do you like that better or less than Hall & Oates?
What?
You can listen to Hall & Oates in the Metal Gear 5.
Oh, in Metal Gear 5. Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's hard to beat. here he comes. Yeah. Ben, what does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says, Team Fortress 2, despite playing it for over 100 hours, the 60s retro spy music, chaotic, but always easily discernible sound effects and one-liners from every class never wear out their welcome.
There's so much voice acting in that game. You wouldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm. Say nothing of the character intro trailers that they did.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I remember when those were being released online. It was just Nirvana every time a new one came out.
Yeah. Rewatching those was one of there was a lot that was fun about doing the TF2 Watch Out for Fireballs. But mm-hmm. going back and looking at that stuff was also very, very fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Juan say?
Juan says, with the ability to play music on PS4 and other modern consoles, I feel like people don't pay much attention to sound design these days. That's why we asked this. Yeah. For me, a modern example would be The Last of Us. Playing that on PS3 and 4 with the headset and just hearing the world around you, crickets, trees, and the occasional clicker really made that world feel vibrant and set up a wonderful experience all three times. I assume that's three times he's played through. Coupled with the subtle guitar themes and excellent voice acting, it was perfect. As for a classic, looks around, checking for Wild Garry's Chrono Cross.
Yeah.
One of my childhood favorites for the soundtrack, which is unlike anything I've heard to date. Replaying it, I never tune out, even the background music, while reading all the convoluted plot exposition strikes something in me. It sets this kind of otherworldly vibe, and I find myself humming songs every so often. Kolbeis, so fucking good.
Is that what I sound like to you?
That's as close as I can get.
Yeah, Chrono Cross is very good. Don't look around for Wild Garry's. He likes being negative. It's fine.
He likes being able to surprise you. So just
yeah, it's pointless. Yeah.
He's too good at hiding.
Yeah, I mean, Last of Us is specifically designed to freak you out with those clickers, specifically on the soundtrack. So they're called clickers, you know.
It has to have been either it's included on the disc or there was like a Amazon instant video documentary about The Last of Us, where they, you know, they talked to the guy who did the guitar soundtrack, and he's like, he's like famous for this specific style of guitar, and they actually gave the game to him in pretty complete form. And then he scored it, which is amazing because it fits everything, so well. I would have guessed that it entered the picture earlier on. But he had a lot of interesting things to say about how he arrived at that guitar and why it is so perfect for the game.
Yeah. Like the soundtrack in that works so well with the pacing of that, like just the fact that just it will have these very long cuts that it does, where it's like scene with nothing happening and then black, then scene with nothing happening, then black. It doesn't try to fill that with information. It just lets the downtime exist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Negative space is a thing in sound design as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just want to go play that game now. Like every chapter is a classic part of that game.
Yeah. Oh man. It's been a long time since I've done that. God, that came out 3 years ago, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
2014.
I remember, so I'm gonna get a little nostalgic. I remember playing it the first night it came out on a Friday and thinking like, this game's okay, like at 30 minutes or an hour into it, and then like kept playing it over week and I was like, oh man, this is getting really good.
Yep.
I played the first bit of that at your house, Ben.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We were out visiting, and I played through the intro with the huge emotional beat, and then was able to transfer my save through the cloud back to my machine at home. So
that was the same time that we went hiking and ran out of water. So
no,
perilous hike.
I'm noticing a theme.
Yeah, everything snaps into focus. What I've been doing wrong.
Most of us walk around dehydrated anyway, so
I was just like, going outdoors period, that seems to be the problem.
Oh yeah. could have told you that.
At least
I play Stardew Valley instead.
Eric writes, anything Jake Kaufman has worked on, but specifically his work on Shantae and the Mighty series. Mighty Switch Force 1 and 2 have an amazing soundtrack.
Very cool.
Yeah, the Shantae games are a blind spot for me, so I'm sorry I can't offer any more comment on that.
Oh, and apparently Jake Kaufman was involved with Crypt of the Necrodancer and Shovel Knight.
Oh,
so tremendous. Yeah, that is a hell of a resume just on the first page of Google.
Huh. Good call.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, what does Roop say?
Roop says, Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery. Just listening to the music and ambient made me tear up from time to time without any reason.
Yeah. I need to go back through that again. It's very short, and though I listen to the soundtrack all the time, the progressive mixes that they do on the way that it mixes with the atmospheric sounds is something that isn't captured.
Is that a game with like really good emotional beats, or is it just that the soundtrack is that good? Because in my mind, and I've never played it, it's kind of more of a tongue-in-cheek, goofy kind of game.
That's a little both.
Okay.
There is a pathos to it.
Cool.
Cool. That was you, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis, what does Chase say?
Yeah, Chase says PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, and that is the perfect answer. It was going to be my answer. is a mandatory sound with headphones game. Sometimes the only warning you have of being in danger is the pitter patter of boots on the downstairs floorboards. Runner up is Golden Sun 1 and 2 as my main introduction to our JRPGs of that style and the beautiful music that goes with them.
Yeah, also like PlayerUnknown, if you're playing it the way that I see a lot of people playing it, you're with people that you're talking with.
Yeah.
And you can't exactly have This American Life on in the background unless that's your gimmick.
I might've mentioned this on the show previously, but it's got the coolest, like, radio chatter generation of any game. Just the stuff that you find yourself saying over the course of playing the game with friends makes you feel so freaking cool.
Yeah.
Like 60 west on the compass, get down. Like it's great.
Get to the farm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's in the window. Okay, go left.
Patrick writes, I have a 7.1 surround sound system in the room that I do all my gaming, and I'm really impressed with the job that Square Enix did with Final Fantasy 12, The Zodiac Age. I've always loved the music in Final Fantasy games, but taking advantage of the 7.1 systems makes the music and sound even better. So that is a speaker above you and a speaker below you as well, I believe, is what makes 7.1 different than 5.1.
And 8.1 is a speaker inside you.
Right. It's like you have to put on a vest, and it's like a laser tag vest. It vibrates.
It's like a rumble pack.
Right. Yeah. No, I unfortunately haven't played that yet. I've wanted to. I'm a little bit Final Fantasy'd out at the moment. I want to knock down a couple of less meaty entries on my list before I dive back into that world. Although, I very much want to.
You need an amuse-bouche.
Yeah. And I'll talk about one of them today.
An amuse-bouche? Why?
Oh, I mean. I don't know. I like a snack or an appetizer as much as the next man.
Yeah.
I'm not made of stone. Ben, what does Chris say?
My vote goes to Amnesia and PT playable trailer for some of the best creepy sound design ever. Fuck that baby is what I'm saying.
When that baby starts talking. Nothing else has talked up to that point. Yeah. Yeah, in Amnesia, I mean, obviously the sound effect of your character grinding his teeth alone is enough.
Oh, ew.
Yeah,
I didn't know they did that.
Yep. It's a nightmare. Yeah. Dennis, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, John beat me to the Souls series, but I have a couple of games that come to mind. The Metal Gear series has phenomenal sound design, from environmental to boss music and everything in between. I can't say enough good about that series. Also, the older Tony Hawk games, because of the punk and metal that they had on their soundtracks, and only because metal rules.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
I mean, at the time I was playing Tony Hawk games, my attention span wasn't so ravaged that I needed some kind of additional input on top of it. But yeah, like there were specific tracks in that were like a destination, you know?
Yeah. What's that brought to mind the Crazy Taxi PS1 game, I think it was, that always started off with the yeah, 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 yeah.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Song. That's good stuff.
Very good stuff. Let's see. That was you. Now it's me. Raghavan says, Overwatch. Each character has a unique sound when walking and running. With even just a decent pair of microphones, the pseudo surround sound implemented in the game allows you to know the nature of the threat and where it's coming from. Once you get used to it, there's so much info in the sound design that it basically becomes a must-have.
Yeah, that is definitely one of the most information heavy sound design games.
Yeah.
Like just out of, what do they have now? Like 20 some odd characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you just by hearing a half second of the footsteps, which one it is.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And also like people like charging their alts, all of them have different, sounds in the lead up. Those characters are very talkative as well.
Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. It's high. No. Oh. That's as far as McCree ever gets in his ult.
Well, of course. Yeah.
Ben. Justice reigns from... Ah!
Ben, what does Alexander say?
Alexander says, "Thief, the soundscape is super precise. You can track the position of the guards through walls. It's what those games have in place of gamey elements like sight or sight radar or ye old detective vision. When you play long enough, you just sink into that ambient sound, listening to the slightest disturbance. Then you walk past something that triggers Garrett to make some wise-ass remark, and you jump so bad that you look like a YouTube video of a startled cat. Damn it, Garrett, a little warning next time."
Would it be hard to do a little bit of warning where, like, maybe his knife is about to move before he speaks? Just like, oh, there's like a different gesture.
Yeah, like a little twirl, a flourish, if you will. I've actually scared, going back to PlayerUnknown, I've scared the piss out of myself by accidentally bumping my mouse into something and firing my gun. and I was just sitting down,
it's coming from zero.
But literally, like, jumped out of my chair scared because all of a sudden there's a gunshot in this, like, you know, attic.
Yeah. And you live in a house with cats and children, so
yeah,
that's yeah.
But I think the lesson is I should never be trusted with a gun because I'm going to accidentally pull the trigger.
Yeah, it's a real Barney Fife situation. Dennis, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, "Any supergiant game, beautiful music, which is matched sometimes with haunting vocals. FTL for best space music. Risk of Rain comes a close second." And he had initially thought it was just music, but he's going to stick with Supergiant for overall sound design as well. And he says, "Because I've been playing Pyre this week, the sound design enhances the feel of the music. The sound of quenching the fire matches with bells as it's a ritual is excellent. I've never fist pumped the air so much."
Haven't played Pyre. I was a bit turned off by the idea that it was a sports game. But then I got curious again when I found out that it's like a fantasy sports game that is mixed in with like visual novel type stuff.
Yeah.
So you remembered it was a Supergiant game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say FTL even has some fantastic sound design too, because that also conveys information about attacks that might be coming in, et cetera.
I agree, but I also, yeah, I think music is way up there. That is one of my answers, is that has some of the best music in any game, I feel like.
Yeah. And I'll round us out here with Tanner, who says, "Hellblade's binaural audio trickery is extremely impressive with the right headphone setup. The voices in the protagonist's head echo throughout the players as well, and it's extremely effective and unsettling."
Holy shit, I did not realize that released today.
Yeah.
I might be downloading that later tonight.
Please don't download it right now. It will affect the quality of the call.
No, yes. Later tonight.
Okay.
That's by a team that I have a ton of respect for.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently what they're trying to do and succeed in doing for the most part is really, really cool vis-a-vis both, you know, gameplay and, you know, a theming and dealing with kind of mental illness.
Yeah. I'm curious about it. Mm-hmm. I got an email ad about it today.
Of course. Of course you did.
Yeah, because that's the world we live in now. So I'm afraid that I don't have a specific answer for like what's best, because I generally always have something going on unless something needs to take up the vocal track in my head, you know? So mm-hmm. I'm listening to dialogue, it gets a little bit, you know, I can't be distracted from it, but I will listen to a podcast in most situations while I'm playing a game and then just pause it when I need to. Here recently, I'm not going to talk about this week, but it might be a game that I talk about next week. Prey does a very good job with this, not just the awesome John Carpenter-esque synth soundtrack that it has. It's a really good soundtrack. But given what that game is all about and what you're fighting, you know, these aliens that can mimic anything in your environment,
perpetual jump scares.
Yes, you desperately want to know where those things are coming from, even if you only have a split second's notice to do it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be my answer for now, based on the 2 hours that I played it.
Sure.
Ben.
I wrote down a decent number of answers. So FTL for music, is, I think, is really good, especially because if you, like, I bet anyone who's played the game can think of the opening chords to that, to the soundtrack yeah. when you start the game. So I think that's like, I don't know, that can speak to its power maybe, or how well it's, you can remember it.
It's such a good genre piece, you know, like they are capturing a specific era of like sci-fi soundtrack with it.
Yeah, like lo-fi science fiction, like arcade game type thing. Mm. But it's it's great. Another good soundtrack I'll say is Half-Life 2, but that I think that's more because that's the music style is something that I'm into. So I could see some people being turned off by it. But more importantly, with Half-Life 2, the sound design of like the different sound cues of enemies and or just like everything, like the health power-ups even, and like the shield power-ups, like everything has very distinctive sound cues that it's like easily identifiable what's going on. But I mean, I think the best example is the radio static of the main bad guys in Half-Life 2. Like whenever you hear that, that's like an immediate cue of, you know, like bad guys are incoming. I think that's really well done. And another example, good sound design for like atmosphere of games. I would like to throw shout outs to Knights of the Old Republic 1 and 2. Just because I feel like they do such a good job with like ambient noises and like cantinas or like spaceports and stuff like that. And it does a really great job of making the area feel much larger than it actually is. By just having all these like details in the background. And then one last example is, I think one of the best integrations of like sound with game design goes to the original Silent Hill with the static and the and the storm alarms. I think those are like really awesome cues that in a game that have like actual implications with the game design.
So, yeah. It's funny because that static is nominally intended to inform you that an enemy is nearby, and you would think that like, okay, you know, light is information, you know, that helps you see when something is nearby you. You would think that that would open things up and kind of air things out, but no, what that accomplishes in either the fog or the darkness is to kind of draw the shroud around you tighter and closer because in a lot of ways it alerts you to the presence, but also it obscures the actual source of the sound. So like you will hear the shh, but you will not hear the, you know, the footsteps and the screams.
Where is it?
Yeah.
It's stabbing me. Yeah.
I dropped a link in the Slack and I also put it in the show notes because you talked about Half-Life 2. Have you seen the video of the sound pack, all sounds replaced with my voice?
No, what is this?
Yeah, he did a trailer for it. I recommend watching it. I don't know if I'd recommend playing with it because who knows how that would affect. But like, it's a guy just doing mouth sounds for every sound in the game. So
that's fantastic.
Pew, pew. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that is just a funny thing that I thought of when you said that other thing. So
that was also probably prompted by me watching the Half-Life 2 videos before the podcast. So
it was top of mind for you, but it's a good answer. Like that, so much about Half-Life 2 is thoughtfully designed, and in general sound design doesn't get a lot of credit. So Dennis, round us out.
Yeah, so I mentioned Plunk Bat, and that's I've said most of what I can about it, I think, over the course of the answers. The one thing I'll add is, you know, since it's so important to know the direction of things, and since, you know, I'm playing with headphones, if you're staring right at a sound, it's sometimes hard to tell, you know, where it is in front of or in back of you. And it's brought to mind, like, you know, I go to the zoo a lot nowadays because I got kids, and flamingos with like an eye on either side of their head are constantly swinging their head back and forth, trying to get a better look. I'm doing it in front of the microphone right now, but trying to get a better look at things. It's always like one angle than the other. And I find myself doing the exact same thing constantly in the game. Cause like, I want to be able to keep a good track of where, you know, a sound is coming from. And so I'll like be swinging my head back and forth.
Yeah. You're hearing
as a car is approaching.
Yeah. You're hearing like a dog smells.
Yeah. But so the image of this, though, as I'm like running across a field in real life, would be just swinging my head back and forth like I'm headbanging or thrashing.
Yeah, like your head is a satellite that has to spin constantly so it can maintain the signal.
It's tactical, I promise.
Oh, man. Since you mentioned the Cincinnati Zoo, hey, dog, you seen Fiona?
I have not. The time I was there most recently, she was inside. So
man.
I've seen all the Fiona like craze on the internet though, and all the t-shirts.
No, she's a good hippo. I would like to see Fiona.
Yes.
But she's getting socialized. I think they have to take her out very, very sparingly so she doesn't get freaked out, which I understand.
Yeah, she's mugging to the cameras now. Is the fame is totally going to her head. And it takes a lot of fame to fill a hippo's head.
Yeah, it's a big head. So thank you, everybody, for writing in. If you want to participate in these, they go up on Tuesday afternoons at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. These are put up thanks to Dennis and Jala, and oftentimes put up based on your suggestions and your ideas for these questions. So thank you to everybody involved.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
I feel like I'm in the frame of mind factorio, but I feel like this podcast is sometimes like that, where we're just using our audience members to generate the show for us.
Oh, that's funny. You said the quiet part loud and the loud part quiet. We can't let them know that we're using them. Oh, geez. One second. I'm going to take an ibuprofen.
Mommy, am I content?
Oh, well, now that has to be in there, so fuck me.
Everyone will know about your pill addiction to ibuprofen, Cole. Yep.
I opened up one container, and it was acetaminophen, so now it's ibuprofen. Okay, well, I always take pills at this time of night.
Schrodinger's ibuprofen?
Yeah, well, I just have two miniature capsules here. Here on my desk. Cool. Well, do either of you need to take a break, or should we go?
I'm looking at the clock and I'm like, man, usually we're just beginning.
Yeah, I know, right?
What am I gonna do with my night?
I'm gonna edit this and then go to sleep.
You think I'm gonna talk for 6 hours? Ha ha ha.
You were on vacation. How many games could you have played?
A lot of Hearthstone. I'm gonna go play by play through every game.
Turn one.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear that.
Yeah. it all comes through as static anyway, right?
I'll follow it up with magic, turn by turn play.
Yeah, right. We deserve each other, Ben.
Yeah, but I don't. So later, guys. All right, so this is a segment break.
The grind.
Now it's time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, since you have been away the longest, I'm going to let you go first, on the condition that you do not give me a play-by-play of every Hearthstone that you've done.
No,
we're on track to end quite early tonight.
Yeah. I will not, although I've been playing a ton of it, because I was on vacation. It was on my phone. Mm-hmm. So it was fun, but I won't, say more about it than that, especially because there's a new expansion about to come out. So anything I say about what I play will be, rapidly, completely negated by a new meta and new expansion and new cards. Yeah. So,
I mean, we are all tears in rain. Like, did you have any particular accomplishment that you made when you were playing it?
Nothing specific. It feels so good when you hold off playing a card because you're like, oh man, if next turn I top deck card X, it's going to be perfect. And then that happens. So had a moment like that where I was literally like, yes, because it was a 1 in 21 chance that I actually got the card I needed. And there it was. So that's card games for you.
Yeah.
I've also been playing, though. I took my Vita along and tried out a game called Elemental, and the A in that title is with a 4, which is a very interesting platformer that I liked quite a lot. So the main concept of the game is that you don't have any direct control over your character's motion. You simply have control over which element they are. And it's a cute little blob that can be either an air bubble, an ice cube, a fireball, or a stone. And each of those has different properties. And essentially, you get from point A to point B in the level by manipulating those
four.
Oh, look
at him. He's a cute little ice cube.
Yeah, those four forms and the transitions between them. So they kind of very overtly state that they wanted this to play differently, and they wanted it to feel very much kind of like momentum and flow driven. And at its best, this feels like the best parts of a Tony Hawk game, where you're just stringing together these combinations and form changes, and everything is clicking. That is really, really fun, and a very enjoyable experience. You get into the flow of it, and everything just kind of clicks. That's a little bit difficult to get to, since the levels are pretty puzzle heavy. It's going to take a lot of trial and error to figure out how to get through them. But I will say I've only tried each level once, and they have a race mode for each level that I think, you know, if you practice and kind of learn the level, you could absolutely destroy it and just get through it so fast. And with such flow. So I haven't quite gotten back and done that yet, but I can kind of get glimpses of how it all fits together.
Yeah. Do you feel like you have enough control over the proceedings to get that kind of flow?
Usually, yeah. Okay. They really stick to that constraint of like you cannot just walk left or right. You can only change forms. Like, it's a four button game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mostly to its credit. There are definitely points where you'll get stuck, or you'll miss a jump, and instead of immediately killing you outright, you're kind of just, all your momentum is gone and you're stuck, and you can spend a lot of time waiting to get back into position.
Right.
It's like, I missed my jump and hit a wall, so now I need to slide backwards slowly as an ice cube down this very, very slight grade for, like, you know, 15 seconds to get back into position to try again.
Yeah.
And I quickly reached the point where I just started killing myself intentionally when that happened.
Right.
Because if you touch the ground as either a fireball or an air bubble, you pop, you die.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just threw myself into the ground. So yeah. There's probably a button somewhere that instant resets you. I don't know, maybe. But having that be a little more obvious, or having it be a little bit easier to get back into the flow, would be good.
Yeah. Just a checkpoint button. Yeah.
But that's inherent to committing to this way of controlling the character. So mm-hmm. I don't begrudge them that.
Yeah.
So what are some of the special like moves for each of the elements?
Yeah, there's nothing too fancy. I mean, it behaves basically as you would envision, and the only special move comes like as you switch. So when you switch to a fireball, there's a very slight kind of jump forward, just enough to like get you moving if you're on a flat plane. If you switch to a rock, it gives you a bit of downward momentum, so you can kind of like cut off your rising or your upward momentum by switching to a rock form. And then if you press rock form again while you're in rock form, it'll give you an additional burst of downward momentum, which can be used to like break through things in the ground. The other thing with fireball is some surfaces will be coated with lava. And if you touch those as a fireball, you'll bounce off them like a rubber ball. Yeah. If you touch them as ice, you will melt. However, you don't die, you melt, which can actually be used to get you through like small little openings that you couldn't get through in a solid form.
Yeah.
And then air bubble is as close to a jump as you're going to get. But you die if you touch anything.
Yeah.
And you're very malleable for any like current, because there's water in the game. Or just like air,
gust of wind. Movement. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. You're a bubble. Like it's all very intuitive. Like the elements, other than like fire bouncing like a rubber ball, everything else just makes complete intuitive sense.
Yeah.
Sense.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. that was a lot of fun.
I'm gonna sound unnecessarily grouchy about this game that I haven't played. And you're making it sound very, very fun. So take this with a grain of salt, however you want. We got to be about through the silhouette art style, right?
Yeah, it's kind of limbo light.
Yeah, it's kind of limbo-y. Another touch point might be like Badlands or maybe Night Sky.
I mean, Ben, what was the game that you were talking about the other day? The through the floor platformer.
OVIVO.
That was like that was the same style. It is samey. And the other thing is the load times. So, I mean, it's on the Vita. So even then, though, it's such a simple art style that I can't imagine
that there's like a lot of assets coming in.
Yeah. I mean, there's pretty good physics to it, right? That's kind of what it trades on.
Right.
So I can maybe see that. But
if you physics don't cost gigabytes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the new game I've been playing. I've been playing a lot more Killing Floor 2. So I streamed that for Jollade, which I don't think I was able to be on the episode where Jolly got to debrief from that. But
yeah,
Thank everyone who contributed to that and was a part of that so much. Like, what an awesome thing for our community to do.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you've heard that a million times over. and I played Killing Floor 2. It was a great time, and I've continued. That's actually a podcast game now. It plays pretty well with the sound off.
Yeah.
There's one or two audio cues that are important, but not, not death causing if you miss them. So, it's good. It's just enough like engagement on a first person shooter that you can play it with half your attention.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's me.
Awesome. Yeah. The platform game that we were talking about, just to repeat it in case anybody was curious and you don't want to look at the notes, Elemental, but with a 4 instead of an A toward the end.
Yes. You will not be able to find it if you do not put the 4 in instead of the A.
Right.
Will you even be able to find it? That I feel like that's a pretty common, like there has to be like a garage band somewhere that's called Elemental with a 4.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Elemental has quickly surpassed like Jacob and John as the most popular name for a child in the United States. So
you never predict what, it's because the character showed up on Game of Thrones with that name.
Yeah. Ben, what you got for me?
Dude, I got a bunch of boring stuff. Oh. So, get the boringest stuff out of the way. Played Rocket League, played Magic Duels. That's mostly the boring stuff. I've continued to play Fidel, which I talked about last week. I don't know if that's interesting to anyone.
That is the dog tile puzzle game.
It is, yes. So it's similar to the Witness.
Oh, you talked about this, yeah.
It's similar to the Witness puzzles, where it's like a pathfinding puzzle. Mm-hmm. But it has typically a lot more complexity than the Witness puzzles, which I don't know if that's an insult or not. I don't think it's not intended to be, for sure. But the difference is like you're a dog doing this and you have a health bar. And so you pass through enemies, which you kill them. It gives you experience, but it lowers your health. And so the goal is to maximize your experience as you're going through these maps. So finding a path where A, you don't die, but B, you maximize your experience. Then as an added wrinkle, there's like Easter eggs on different maps. There's 16 different levels. So and they all kind of have like different rules or definitely a different setting. So the goal is to kind of maximize your experience each time. If you get enough experience, you level up. So whenever you level up, your health bar is automatically refilled from where it was, which can add a wrinkle to your plans. If you're planning on going through a certain path and getting a health pack at a certain time, it's never like a negative necessarily, but it can make something less efficient than it was intended to be. And then the other thing is it'll give you an additional heart. So you start the game with like 2 hearts, and then every time you level up, you get an additional heart. So you might end with like 5 or 6. Why that's important is one of the main staples of the game is if you kill 3 enemies in a row in 3 consecutive moves, you get added bonus to your XP for that. So there's kind of like an interesting strategy at the beginning levels where there's a few enemies where you can kill them without taking any damage if you do it in a certain way. Like, for example, there's a chest where if you hit it on one specific side, it'll kill it. There's a turtle. If you hit it on one specific side, you'll kill it without incurring any damage. So kind of the goal is to go through people so you can get 3 in a row as much as possible in the beginning levels. Mm-hmm. But then it scales up differently. Once you're at 3 hearts, then you don't have to worry about that as much. And so it kind of changes the dynamics. So it's a very, it seems like a very interesting problem to tackle from a game design perspective, because you have to design these levels where it's not exactly known how many hearts the player is going to have, but they need to be able to like at least have a feasible path through wherever they, wherever they're starting at. And there's certain branches that you can go that are much easier to get to if you're at a certain level by that point. So that's kind of like an interesting wrinkle in the game.
Oh, wow.
I tried to get one of my coworkers to play this game and stream it over the weekend because uh-huh. He was somebody who was really into The Witness. Did not like this game as much because there's the added like timer portion of the game where
it's a puzzle game.
It's a puzzle game for 2 minutes, and then it's I need to get done with this really quickly for the next 5 seconds.
Yeah, that stands in stark contrast to The Witness, which is a very kind of take it at your own pace kind of game.
Yes, yeah, it is a very easygoing game. Not stress. It's only mentally stressful, not anything else.
Right.
But I don't know if that's whatever. but yeah, so Fidel is pretty cool. I like it. It's definitely like a pickup play for like 10-20 minutes and then put it down sort of game. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm gonna continue to do that. There's also like a ton of depth to the game. So it's just trying to find out like Easter eggs of the game of like how to get to certain things at certain times. Like every level usually has some sort of wrinkle where it's like two or three ways you can kind of tackle a problem. So just trying to figure that stuff out is kind of interesting. I've beat the game once on the base run through. There are different run throughs after that, kind of. So
like the same maps but with different constraints, or
there's like a challenge mode. There's also like an added challenge to the base game. But I think there's also run throughs beyond that. I'm not exactly sure of. So yeah. It's interesting. It's a game that like they don't really do you any favors in terms of telegraphing this stuff to you. The best that they do is that the first level of every run through is randomized and it's a different monster of the game. And so it's kind of there as a platform to teach you how the monster works.
Right.
It's a safe enough setting that you can't die, I'm pretty sure. And but it'll teach you like how to maximize your experience of that particular person. Or just teach you the rules of like how they operate. Right. So it's an interesting game. Has a lot of depth. They haven't really done a lot to advertise it though. So I don't really foresee it being a smash hit or a blow away game or anything. Just because it seems like it actively obscures information from you, and it's your job to like figure it out and kind of experiment with it, which has some cool parts and then some frustrating parts, perhaps.
Yeah, far be it for me to like demand more work of them, but this seems like a game that would fit in very well on iOS.
Possibly. If you could draw a path, perhaps. Yeah.
I've seen games like that. Like I've definitely played games that are similar. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the most common mistake in the game is thinking you have enough life to go through a certain person, and then like halfway through hit the person, immediately switches modes, a ghost appears at your entrance and starts chasing down your leash. You immediately have to solve the puzzle like as best you can. Speaking of sound design, there's a very good sound design cue for that where it's like a bark of pain from the dog. Aww. And then a ghost and a music cue. And it's like, it's very good at getting you into oh shit mode. So yeah. So that's fun. And then the last game that I have on my list is Factorio. I've been playing a good amount of that. I've played, like 20 plus hours of it now. I played a run through last weekend where I basically got to the point where there's four or five different science levels to the game. So I got to the point where I got to science 3 and I had an automated factory that was automatically creating what you need to do the like level 3 research and sending it to the research facilities. So that was good. So it's just kind of like a time game of like picking what do you want to research. But then the problem is you continually are attacked. They have a good scaling difficulty system where the more productive your factory is, the more pollution it creates and the more you are attacked.
Right. And the more it becomes a different kind of game than the one you maybe signed up for.
Yes. So my solution to this is I built a conveyor belt that went all the way around the perimeter of my base, and it just there was a machine that produced gun belts, I guess. Okay. And just put them on this line and wrap around the entire base.
Moving turrets?
Yeah, and then I have turrets. I have turrets planted at different locations with these loaders that are next to them. So they'll just reach onto the belt and pull bullets and put them back in the turrets if the turrets run low on ammo. So it's basically basically my algorithm is whenever a turret gets damaged, I'll just build two turrets there. And then they'll be connected to this gun belt that's at the perimeter of my base.
Right.
And the problem though is eventually like it doesn't matter how many turrets are there, like there's so many people coming that something will get damaged. So I put a pause on the game at that point because it was getting too stressful.
Because you can't even automate around the problem they introduced from too much automation.
Kind of, yeah. There's ways you can like automate. The other thing is I built walls around this too to try and give buffer for the turrets, but then those will start getting destroyed. Apparently there's a way to automate like repairing the walls. I haven't looked into that yet. But one of the things I did look into is just started watching YouTube videos of different factories that people have created.
Okay.
And that's like pretty interesting because it's very much like an engineering sort of problem. And so there's like a lot of different solutions for it. Some of them are like kind of like small elegant solutions for, like, for example, how to make research, but you're making it kind of like at a very low like throughput. Then there's like another like YouTube series of people just like taking user submitted factories and just analyzing them and saying like, okay, here's the problem with this, this, and this, but here's the good points of this or whatever. And so like,
like grading them like red.
Yeah.
Taking so the red pen to them. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like talking about like, they're being very academic about it. They're talking about like the throughput of like the resources and stuff. Yeah. And it's like, so, you know, like if you want to automate a furnace, you know, like this massive like furnace system where you're putting in raw materials and then you're like putting out refined materials, like that's fine. But you need, you know, like one belt that has two columns full of coal. That's a two input. Then you need another one of the raw materials to steel. But you need to make sure that you're never combining these in a point where it would be inefficient. For example, if you like merge these onto a common belt, you have like half the efficiency because like, I don't know if that makes sense or not without showing a video of it or a picture of it. But there's like a lot of ways like that where you can accidentally be inefficient with the factory that you're making. So that was interesting in its own right. So I started a second playthrough with like a friendly bad guy mode on where basically they don't attack you until you attack them.
Okay. So you just have like a bunch of loiterers.
I have a bunch of inhabitants of their own planet who are not attacking me yet. But so I tried doing some of these more like efficient plans, like for example, like so there's different scales of like processing that you do. So you start off just doing kind of like burning everything. You have coal, that you can burn, like either coal or trees for your fuel. From that, you do electricity. From that, you can do like liquid oil processing. Eventually, you can do like nuclear and maybe something beyond that. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to do like the efficient versions of like the first two levels of like electricity and the tree and coal processing. So I don't know. That's just a kind of like an interesting thing. It's basically like Legos at that point. It's not like which I'm completely fine with. It's it's a very calming builder sort of game. But yeah,
nice.
It's definitely enjoyable for now. I don't know if I'll play it to completion or not. It seems like it's a long road ahead, but I don't know. It's also like really interesting and it's fun to implement designs like that.
So. Yeah, it seems like you've gotten a lot out of it so far.
Sure. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, and it's definitely impressive feat of programming because like I saw some of the, when you create a new game, there's a lot of like advanced settings you can do where you can kind of like, you can set the pollution factor of buildings, or you can set the aggression of like animals, but there's a lot of little dials you can control for. So, and you can make one of the parameters was like how big you want to make the map. And one of the options was infinite. So that's impressive. It's own right.
Yeah. It seems like it scales very well. There's an awful lot that it's keeping track of.
So, So like that RPG where it was managing pop-up windows, someone's going to make a game about getting the settings for the game just right.
And then sending their settings over to somebody on YouTube to run a clinic on them.
Yeah.
Configuro.
That's pretty good. And is that all you've been playing?
That's all I got.
Cool. So I mentioned playing Prey a little bit earlier in the episode in the multiplayer. That's my current project right now. And I'm having fun with it, but I'm not ready to speak with any depth on it other than to just say like, yeah, it has drawn me in so far.
How far are you into it?
Like the third main story mission or something like that.
Okay. In hours, how many hours is that?
Like two.
Okay, cool.
The intro is great. The intro is something that I think is really special.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that's not what I'm here to talk about. I'm here to talk about Tacoma.
So you played
this. Oh, all right.
Yeah. So Tacoma is a game made by Fulbright, the people behind Gone Home. It's what they've been working on since Gone Home came out. It's very similar in a lot of regards. People call these games walking simulators, but I think that the genre is old enough and mature enough to have kind of broken apart into, I don't know, some different branches. And I think that this and Gone Home can be accurately described as privacy invasion simulators.
I was going to say interactive museums.
Yeah. Interactive museums, pirate, you know, just like rummaging, you know, kind of things. Cause you are, you know, going through a bunch of people's stuff and trying to draw conclusions about them as people, about the way they lived when they are not there. You know, it's environmental storytelling, yes, but it's an entire game that exists to draw you through it, right?
Are there any similarities between this game and Gone Home, like in terms of like character development, or are they two different beasts entirely?
So I was skeptical because I really, really love Gone Home. And over time, what I boiled it down to was Gone Home had three things that were very much working in its favor. First off, the environment, the fact that you're walking around a big spooky house that is more intricate than it seems, you know, that is a big thing in its favor. Second would be the fact that it's a period piece. You know, it is very much part of its time. You know, it's a look at a home in the early to mid 90s, right? And everything about it reads like that. So that period piece aspect of it really worked for me pretty well because, you know, I grew up during that time. So there we go. Check mark in its favor. The third was that it was a very grounded kind of story, you know, very human story, notwithstanding the fact that most of us went into it expecting it to be, I say most of us, I went into it expecting there to be something somewhat supernatural about it. And the game does an awful lot.
They even kind of point you in that direction a little bit.
Yeah.
As a fake out.
Exactly. And realizing exactly what the scope of the story was is part of the magic of it. You know, that I think is lost because I think a lot of people know ultimately what it ended up being about. Right. But you know, you're talking about people in a house, you know, there's nothing that overtly fantastical about it. And so the idea of taking that formula of going around and opening up drawers and, you know, shaking out cabinets and stuff in a space station, it feels like it puts all three of those things in jeopardy, you know, and this was just in my lead up to this. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, even though I have a tremendous amount of affection for Fulbright and Gone Home, like Steve Gaynor, one of the lead guys at Fulbright has helped out like on Duckstream. Like he came by and you know, was on stream with people or, you know, like with the guys over in Portland and like brought them sandwiches and stuff. I've met him and hung out with him, so there could be like a conflict of interest here. I had enough hope that this was going to be, you know, good that I bought like a signed print of some of their art. You know, it's up on my wall. I really enjoy having it. So all of that is to say that, you know, even though I had faith that they would pull it off, it felt like it had stuff going against it. So let's go back through those. We have, we're trading in the big spooky house for a space station, which is a place,
I was gonna say, which is the biggest and spookiest of houses, spaces.
Yes, okay. Space is a big spooky house. I agree. But it, you know, it's not a setting that has really spoken to me before. It doesn't speak to me on its face in the way that a spooky house would. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows if that's genre preference or whatever. Most of the stories that I've enjoyed about, you know, things that have taken place in a space station, they've had to work very hard to justify that setting to me, you know, in a lot of ways. So there we go. Second, the period, giving up something that is grounded, something that is in our past, something that, you know, is, you know, part of my life, a small little slice of my own personal life, and flinging this out 80 years in the future or 70 years in the future or whatever it ends up being, that could be considered like, okay, well, that's immediately we're taking away some of the relevance that it might have to me personally, you know, so we're severing that shortcut to my heart. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Third, the grounded human story. Well, just look at the first two. You know, we're no longer in a home. We're in space, you know, so like, you know, an AI is going to be a part of this, you know, an evil corporation is going to be a part of this because that's just kind of the way these stories roll. You know, it comes, it's part of the furniture. It comes, you know, with that out of the box. Right. Look at, you know, far in the future there, you know, will their concerns be, you know, the same? Well, like, will it be sufficiently small? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what I liked about Gone Home, was that it was sufficiently small. So all of this sounds like I'm going to come down very negative on this, despite all those hangups and despite all of kind of that, I'll go in wanting to like this and seeing how it is. I like it a lot. It's very good. I recommend people play it because there we go. I mean, It would also be worthwhile if they flopped it and I could talk about the ways that it fell down. But no, it feels like it, it works against those first two, and any detrimental effects those would have on the last, to deliver these awesome pieces, these awesome stories and snapshots of humanity, in these very inhuman kind of settings and places, right? By showing, the story of these people as they try to, adapt and deal with this horrible situation that they have been put into, namely, a failure on the space station Tacoma. And, being cut off and trying to deal with the catastrophe. The way that this differs from Gone Home, it has the basics of walking around and, it's populated with all kinds of like just packaging and documents and, you see the remnants of like where they left these particular spaces, as the catastrophe kind of advanced, right? Everything's kind of held in state. All of that's there and intact. What it has in addition to that is a system that plays with the idea of augmented reality.
Yes. I've seen some of this. Yeah.
Yeah. So instead of walking through and getting the majority of the story by documents or by notes that somebody had written, et cetera, you walk in and your little implant says like, hey, we have an augmented reality, snippet of data that we can recover and show you. And then what it does is it presents, the inhabitants. There are six characters who live on this, space station. It presents a scene with them, as you walk around and examine what they're doing, and, watch them, and actually like when they open up their own like little, like PDA style thing, their own personal desktop, you recover that when they open it up. And so you get to read their email and check their different apps and their text messages and stuff like that to get more of it. But you are watching these bits of dialogue in real time. So immediately this is much more, it's a much higher degree of difficulty that they are attempting and achieving, by presenting this in a dramatic way, by these wireframes that they show.
Yeah, I think maybe something that it reminded me of is, remember the Batman game, the one that was the terrible one that was not made by Rocksteady? They had like a similar system in there where they would show like a crime, but you could like rewind the scene to any point during this like time slice.
Yeah.
But it seemed very reminiscent of that kind of.
Yeah. So that brings up a good point, because there is rewinding in this. So like you will come upon a scene of like maybe one or two people talking, but you will see icons for any number of people's desktops that you can recover as you're going around, or you will come upon like the group like together for this, crisis meeting. Okay, well, like what are we going to do? And then they break off into their own little let's go walk down this hallway, and then you will follow them. You will listen to the main conversation, rewind back to the beginning or the point where somebody broke off, and then follow the next people down and get their part of the story, and then follow one of them back and see them talk to somebody else. So like, instead of having like individual rooms with these, very limited kind of scenes that are popping up, what it is doing is like you walk into an entire suite that has been captured, and you are looking at the entire room. You're looking at all of these rooms and the way they fit together. And this serves an amazing purpose of, giving you this first blush, kind of exploration of the space as they are semi-invisibly dragging you through and showing you where people tend to go and what they do there.
Okay.
Which is so great. Like I was just noticing that, like, I probably wouldn't have found this room. I probably wouldn't have gone here. But like I'm exploring it and rooting around as I'm listening to the two of these people talk.
Yeah, I guess that's much more interesting than like follow the right wall until you're done exploring a space.
and that would make it feel workmanlike. There would still be cool stuff. You would still find cool stuff. But by actually like following the people who use that space into that space, and then you're listening to and paying attention to their ghosts until they're gone, and then just living in the silence, and then going and exploring somewhere else by following another line. It feels like a very elegant way to fill the space with story, but also guide you to the things that they want you to see in a way that is not obnoxious.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. I don't want to talk too much more about like what's actually going on in this aside from, I mean,
the payoff's heavily on the story, right? Similar to Gone Home.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a Fulbright game. And moreover, it's a game of this type. So it is very short and it is very narrative heavy.
Have you already completed it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a two sitting game. My play clock maxed out at like 4 hours and I touched pretty much everything. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. So I don't want to go too much into it. It's a little bit of a bummer because you are going like into particular sections of the space station. Like, okay, you're going to go to admin, then you're going to go to biomed, then you're going to go to et cetera. Like it's taking you down the line as opposed to like guiding you through a big space, but those are trade-offs, right? And also it wouldn't make sense. Maybe it wouldn't make sense if it was like one big interconnected thing. So
do you, having played through, are you worried that you missed anything or is it pretty clear? Like, okay, no, I feel like I've gotten everything.
I feel like I've gotten what I want.
Like they don't make it hard to
no.
Complete is a weird way to say it, but
no, it doesn't feel like they hide an awful lot. There may be some like corrupted logs that open up on a second playthrough. I don't know that I am, you know, missing out on too much by not going back and looking at it. Because
you can look up like an Easter egg montage later on.
Yeah, yeah, or I can just like read like a TV Tropes page and, you know, get some character details that I may have missed. Stuff like that. Who knows? If somebody, and I'm not going to do that right away, if somebody's listening and you know, like, no, Cole, you absolutely need to go back and do this again, it's a short enough investment that I would probably do it again. Specifically, like, are those corrupted logs uncorrupted? Can you see everything? I just took those as like, oh, they wanted to have something here, but they didn't, you know, it didn't make sense to just fill the world with more clutter because it was already pretty, it was already lively enough, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are there any super sweet space vistas?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
All right.
There's some cool stuff because this is, what you're on is a space station that is like a lunar interchange. So, crafts that are going from Earth to the moon will stop at Tacoma to have, you know, to be serviced or as like a stopover point. You know, but because you're there and you're in relatively low orbit, you can pretty much always see Earth. You can pretty much always see the other parts of the station when you look out the window or the hatch or whatever you call it on a craft like that. But moreover, because of the way things rotate, it actually models within a room and through a window when you are facing the light side or the dark side. So you'll just be in this room with an AR of somebody like practicing their guitar and playing it shitty. And you'll just watch as periodically the slice of light moves through the window and then just like tracks across the room over the course of like 30 seconds. And then 2 minutes later, it'll do it again.
Huh. That's awesome.
Yeah. Other cool stuff. And just one other thing, like, it makes sense given the studio that they would do this, but it feels worth calling out. Incredibly diverse cast of characters in this, you know, lots of different ethnicities. They play with religion in a very cool way. Like body types and things. Like it feels a little bit counter to the purpose that they're trying to achieve by making a point of it because it so doesn't make a point of it or call it out. But it was noticed and appreciated.
Hmm.
Very, very, very inclusive story.
Cool.
Yeah. But yeah, Tacoma, it's great. Did you guys have any questions about it?
Looks cool. Is it worth $20?
I can't tell you what $20 is worth, man.
It's true. It's different for everybody. Yeah.
I felt fine. I felt fine having paid $20 for my 4 hours. Yeah, that breaks down to roughly what it costs to go to a movie. You know, in some ways you judge the success of a movie and this in very similar ways. A movie has worked on me if I find myself thinking about it, you know, later on, you know, like how long does this stick with me? This is probably going to stick with me for a while.
Yeah, I did the exact same thing with Gone Home. Right. So,
yeah. Yeah. So, you know, if you see fit to wait for a sale, I'm just speaking to a general you. You shouldn't feel bad about that because, again, I cannot tell you what $20 is worth to you. If you're in a position where you can make a pretty educated guess about the way you react to this type of game, to a Gone Home or to a Firewatch or any of those, and you know whether or not you're going to like it, I would say this is comparable to those in terms of what you're going to get out of it, be that good or be that bad, by mm-hmm. the way you look at it. How was that for a non-answer?
That was a good answer.
So yeah.
What we're saying is you have to make your own decisions, kid.
Oh man, and it's such a 180 to go from that over to Prey, which is in some ways kind of similar, at least in setting. but very, very different in terms of tone and mechanical depth. It'll take a while to get my sea legs on that. Yeah. Cool. So that's all. That's all I got. Do you all want to button it up?
Let's do
buttons.
It.
I think she's going to be okay with that because you carried it forward. You didn't just you didn't drop a zipper, you know.
Yeah. buttons won the poll, man. I gotta respect the will of the people.
And also in general, don't drop a zipper. It has to be very have to be very sure of your shot when you drop a zipper. Cool. Well, thank you everybody for listening. I don't know that I have an awful lot in the way of admin or call to action for you, aside from just thanking you for listening.
I got a question for you, and you can cut this if you want, but is this the first episode that will be available to people after we have hit that 10 million downloads for the network mark?
Oh yeah, we might as well talk about that because this is the new show. Yeah, I was compiling the numbers over the past month or so yesterday when I was at work, by which I mean Monday. you know, it was at lunchtime and spreadsheets soothe me, so judge me if you will. I fired it up and I figured out the network as a whole, no one particular show, but all the shows together, just in the past few days surpassed 10 million downloads.
Wow.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah. So thank you everybody who helped contribute to that big number. You know, who knows how many of those downloads represent full listens. We have no access really to that information. But regardless, it is a cool metric that we, you know, can celebrate every once in a while. You only pass 10 million once. Mm-hmm. But, you know, every million I do kind of make a note of it and celebrate it. And this is a big one.
Yeah, that's
Yay!
Awesome.
Yeah. So if you see fit, leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. That makes a big difference. We've gotten a couple of them recently, but we could always use more. If you can take the time to do that, it'd be very appreciated. But otherwise, tell your friends and come back next week. We'll be here for you. Am I forgetting anything?
Don't think so.
Okay. So I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around for some titles.
Sweet.
Okay. Who has some titles?
I've just got one written down.
Okay. What's that one?
Configuro.
I have Space is a Big Spooky House. And I have I'm Not Made of Stone.
Okay. Okay. I have Configuro as well. But I also have Mommy, Am I Content? I may make a push for Mommy, Am I Content.
That's fine.
Pretty good.
Because when it's red, like if I saw this, what I would think it is like Mommy, Am I Content. and if somebody's paying attention to that, I think it would be a fun moment for them to realize what it's actually doing.
That is like the most subtle Rorschach test right there. Oh man.
How ruined are you by marketing?
Oh, I kind of love that. Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Cool.
Okay, cool. Were you going to say something, Ben?
No.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, I'm going to go and edit this up real quick. People seem to like when it goes up fresh and hot. So
yeah, dude. Thanks for doing that. That's I know you say it's a shift in the schedule, but that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Good cast, you.
Cool. Well, this was fun. Awesome. Well, you guys have a good night, and I will talk to you the next time I talk to you.
Yeah. See you around.
All right. Later.
All right. See you, dude.
Bye. Bye.